Welcome, welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now, up to bat, Brett Boone.
Welcome to Brett Boone Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Boone, and today on the program, I've got a very special guest. This man was a big part of my childhood. A lot of sleepovers. I hung out with his son, Petey. We still, to this day, text back and forth about our memories as a kid during those Philly years. He really needs no introductions. He's got more accolades than I can mention today. He's simply known as the Hit King. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Pete Rose to the program. Pete, thanks for coming on the program.
Well, Brett, it's a pleasure. Of course, you forgot to tell him that when I was with Philadelphia for two World Series in 5 years, one championship, I think you knew the catcher on that team.
I barely knew him. You know, he's still a pain in the ass right now, Pete. He lives about 10 miles away from me. I just had lunch, by the way. I just had lunch with him yesterday. I said, we got Pete on the program tomorrow. He said, give Pete my best, would you, Brett? I said, yeah. Yeah, Bobby, I will.
Yeah, matter of fact, remember he muffed that pop-up over by the dugout?
I was watching that the other day, and I said,
no, he didn't muff it. That was one of those balls that was right in the middle of his ball and my ball. We're both being very aggressive, and the dugout's real close to first base over there, and I happened to be there. I mean, we worked on that play for about 2 weeks before it actually happened. No, I'm just kidding.
let me set this up for those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast. All right, this is 1980. I'm 10 years old. I'm watching this play. It's Pete's playing first. My dad's catching. Pop up down to first base side. It's a famous play now. Dad, you know, dad's running towards the outfield. Hits off his glove. Pete's there to catch it. Big play. I think it's the ninth inning, right before Tug closes it out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of been a running joke. And Dad told me, I said, Dad, I'm going to bring up the play with you and Pete. He goes, you tell Pete Rose. He said, Pete, Charlie hustled my ass. That was his ball. You tell him that. And he laughed. He laughed. And I said, I'll tell him.
He's been saying that for 40 years. I mean, yeah. Well, Brett, it would have been my ball, but the bases were drunk, and I was playing behind the runner. I wasn't holding the runner on.
Right.
And I think your dad forgot about that. But, it was a great play. It was two guys hustling to try to get an out, and that made it the second out of the inning. And, of course, Willie Wilson struck out for the 13th time in that World Series, in the World Series, and we were world champions. That's why you play, man. I only got to do that three times. I got to lose three World Series. But most guys don't get the opportunity to play in six World Series, which I did. And, of course, you played with some great players. And, you know, I actually had 12 Hall of Fame teammates. I had a Hall of Famer, Brett, at every position on the field when I played. I can give them to you.
All right, I want to hear them.
Bench, Schmidt, Larkin, Morgan, Perez, Frank Robinson, Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton. Those were all my ex-teammates. Every one of them, including left and right, hand pitchers. So it was a lot of fun for me. You know, you had fun in Philadelphia. Why? Because we had a good team, and we won games. That's all you try to do as a baseball player, as you know, you were raised right, is try to win the game. That's why you play. You don't play for exercise. You play to win the game. I don't care if you're in little league or high school or college or minor leagues. You get to the big leagues. Hey, everybody has more fun when you win. I think you'll agree with that.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, Pete, you know, I got to play, you know, 14 years in the big leagues.
Yeah.
But when I talk about the game, and of course, we love our generation. I love my time in Seattle. I love my time in Cincinnati. I played for the Braves for a year. I got to go to a World Series with them. But when I'm talking about the game, a lot of time, some of my fondest memories when I was a little kid and getting to come to the ballpark. You know, Petey, your son, we talk about it. He grew up with the Big Red Machine. Then you came to Philly in 79. We became buddies, partnering around Veterans Stadium. And just hanging out, you know, when you're an adult and – you know, you're at this stage of life. I look back on my career very fondly, but I look back on my childhood and think I was a pretty damn special childhood. What I got to do hanging in that clubhouse, you know, hanging with Bull and Schmitty and
taking ground balls at
Tug and you giving me a hard time
underneath the stadium.
Yeah, me hanging out with all the mullions.
And, you must be talking about Concepcion now.
Oh, man. Tell the Boone podcast what a mullion is, because you used to call me a mullion all the time.
Well, you first of all, if you're ugly, you're called ugly. And if you're semi-ugly, you're called a scullion. And if you're a real mullion, you're called a mullion. I mean, there's a lot of mullions in baseball.
Oh,
I mean, there's so many guys in baseball. You slap them on the back of the head to wake them up. I mean, you know, there's a lot of scullions around, but they think they're good looking. You know, they think they're all Earl Flynn's and John Wayne's and stuff like that, but really they're mullions.
Oh,
we got
man.
Them in both leagues. We got them today. I see guys that, you know, some of these guys should always wear a hat. They should wear helmets when they get interviewed, so they cover up that punum, as we call it, as you know. But it's fun. It's fun to be around big league baseball and around the clubhouses. And, man, we were pretty lucky in Philly because we had a lot of kids that were good players, you know, getting in our way during the pre-practice ground balls and stuff like that.
But you realize, though, back then? Go ahead.
Tug didn't have any. Tug had he didn't have a son. McRae had a couple sons. Lisinski had a son.
Yep.
Bola didn't have any kids. Of course, I had a son. You had a son. We're good players. I mean, these kids, they grew up in baseball. They grew up on how to play the game of baseball, and that's why they were good players. That's why they both made the big leagues. Your son made it for 14 years. My son made it for 4 months, but he still made it. A lot of people don't make the big leagues. They try to think they're going to be in the big leagues, and to make the big leagues is a special thing in the world of baseball today.
I'll tell you what, walking around life now, you're in Cincinnati doing an appearance. When the fans come up to you on a daily basis, what do they want to talk to Pete about?
The Big Red Machine.
Yeah.
You know, because you had so many Hall of Famers on that ball club. Brett, as you know, it's hard to play on a team that people give you a name, whereas the Gas House Kids, you know, the Big Red Machine, you know, the Boys of Summer. Not many teams are special enough to get a nickname from the fans. And, you know, hell, I can talk about the greatest catcher ever, the greatest third baseman ever, greatest second baseman ever, greatest Cuban ever. They were all my teammates. And, you know, Stever, one of the best right-handers ever, Carlton, one of the best left-handers ever. You know, and it's just fun to reminisce about the time with those guys, because if you're a Hall of Famer, most of the guys that are Hall of Famers act like Hall of Famers. You know, not cocky, but just confident. They carry themselves in the right way. And that's what all the guys did, not only in Cincinnati, but on the Big Red Machine, but in Philadelphia. You know, when I played for Schmidt, I mean, Schmidt was a great player, and he played hard every day. So was Boa. So was Wazinski. So was Maddox. So was McBride. So was your dad. I mean, I was so blessed to be around great players. You almost had to be great yourself, or they laugh you off the ball club.
Yeah, I played in Cincinnati from '94 to '98, and believe me, we heard a lot about the Big Red Machine.
Yeah.
I got a chance. You know, Johnny was around a lot during my years there in the mid '90s. To this day, Tony Perez, one of my favorite guys in baseball. I just love Tony. Concepcion's great. You know, I'd see George Foster once in a while, but it's one of those teams that has stood the test of time. You know, you won two World Series, but today,
back to back.
But today,
you know, let me tell you something, Brett. This is interesting.
You got it.
I graduated my high school on a Friday in 1960, and I signed with the Reds the next day, and they had a player on the team, because the next day after that, I reported to Geneva, New York, to play second base for the Geneva Reds. And the second baseman on that team was Antanasio Tony Perez. So I've been knowing Tony Perez since 1960. And I was in Cincinnati about 2 months ago and had lunch with him and sat there for 2 hours and didn't understand a word he said. He still can't speak English.
he's unbelievable, and he's the salt of the earth. I always have. I played with Eduardo, his son.
He does a good job on TV.
Eduardo, he does a really good job. Yeah,
I went through years of watching Sunday Night Baseball with Eduardo and whoever else was on there, and every time I watched, I would call Eduardo and I would say, mention your dad. Mention your dad belongs in the Hall of Fame. Because it took Tony like 10 years or 10 bouts to get on the Hall of Fame. I said, you got to let people know how good your dad was. So he would always talk about his dad on Sunday Night Baseball because he belonged in the Hall of Fame. And the writers were just very hesitant and very slow at putting him on the ballot and voting for him. Because I don't think I've ever been a guy that was better at knocking in runs than Tony Perez. He got dollar signs in his eyes when there's a man in scoring position. You know, I remember when he first came over, Joe Morgan came over to Cincinnati from Houston. And I looked at Joe. I said, Joe, you know, he's in the clubhouse the first day. I said, do you like to hit when the pitcher's in the stretch, you know, as opposed to the windup? We all do, you know, because you don't think they throw as hard in the stretch. He said, sure, I do. I said, well, you see that office over there? That's Sparky's office. You go in there and tell him you want to hit after me, okay? Wow. Because I'm always going to have the pitcher in the stretch. The next damn day, Joe Morgan was hitting second.
Wow. That's awesome. And
when you get on base 5,800 times, Brett, the pitcher's going to be in the stretch most of the time.
I was looking at that too. You know, everybody knows Pete. Yeah, he's the hit king, and he's got. But I was looking at other numbers, the games you played, the at bats you had. You went to the dish over 14,000 times, just official at bats, not plate appearances. At bats,
I had 1,500 walks.
Yeah, it's more than you got. Nobody thinks of you as a home run hitter. You got like 160 homers.
Yeah, but I wasn't a home run hitter. I was a double hitter. I got 742 of those.
And I think that's 130,
140 triples. But, you know, I just tried to get on base and get in scoring position and tried. And I scored almost 2,200 runs. And that's really a credit to the guys I played with. Over Schmidt, whether it was Glazinski, whether it was Bench, whether it was Perez. You know, Tony Perez knocked in almost 1,700 runs. Hitting after Johnny Bench. Johnny Bench didn't leave a lot of ducks on the pond. Right. So when I look at Tony Perez's numbers and I see those RBIs, man, he picked up a lot of two-out RBIs. But that's the kind of hitter he was. You know, we had Bench and we had Tony and then we had George Foster, who hit 52 home runs 1 year, and he had well over 100 RBIs many, many years. So that's why we were called the Big Red Machine. And we had Anderson. We had Sparky Anderson, most free smart guy I've ever played for. You know, he used to teach me, Brett, and you think about this, and it's absolutely true. There's three ways you can treat a player, okay, and only three ways. Pat him on the ass, kick him in the ass, or leave him alone. Don't pat the guy that needs kicked. Don't kick the guy that needs left alone. If you're going to get the most out of your players, you got to know what makes them tick. And Sparky was like a genius at figuring out people. You know, Sparky, and I played for Dallas Green, who was a no-nonsense manager in Philadelphia. You know, I played for a lot of managers, too. I played for Fred Hutchison, the guy gave me a job. I played for Don Hefner. Dave Bristol really put the Big Red Machine together, and Sparky developed it. You know, Dave Bristol played with us guys in the minor leagues when he was an old second baseman. I say, us guys, I mean guys like Mel Kleen and guys like Art Shamsky, Tommy Helms. I remember I played with Tommy in Macon in 1962. I scored 136 runs. Tommy got 200-some hits in the minor leagues. He hit 340. I only hit 330. But because of Tommy, I scored almost 140 runs. And Shamsky was on that team. Mel Queen was on that team. Dave Bristol was our manager. Gus Gill played for Cleveland, was a third baseman on that ball club. I mean, from the days I started out, I was always blessed to be around great players. And I always appreciated that because great players, they just know how to carry themselves, Brett. You've been around great players. There's something special about great players. I mean, they know how to handle themselves on the field. They know how to handle themselves in the clubhouse. There's no problem with the manager. And those are the type of guys I got to play with.
I think you make a good point. I think when it comes to managing, and we'll get to your player managing days a little bit later, but you point out you got to kick some guys in the ass, and you got to give some guys a hug is how I explain it. Because you got to know managing you're managing people, you're managing personalities, you're managing egos. And some guy, if you kick him, he'll quit on you. He'll go over in the corner and you won't see him again.
Or you couldn't yell at David Concepcion.
He's one of your best players. Need him.
Yes. But you had to pat Davey on the ass every day. You could do anything you wanted to Tony Perez. You yell at him, he'll say, "I'll show you, you son of a bitch." And he'll go out and hit two home runs.
Yeah.
Bench, just leave Bench alone. He has so much talent. Just leave him alone.
Yeah.
And let him do what he does. I lost him. Where is he? Where'd he go? You there?
I can hear you, but I lost your – yeah, you're back.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it. You're back. Yeah.
All right, buddy. So, you know, we were both blessed to be around great players and to watch them practice, to watch the way they prepare for the games. I think that's the big thing about star players, because they all are stars, and they deserve to be stars because of their hard work. You don't become a star, Brett, if you don't work hard. You probably took more ground balls than anybody else. You probably took more batting practice than anybody on your team. I know I did. Hey, you know when I used to take batting practice, Brett? I always took extra batting practice after the game was over, because that's fresh on my mind what I'm doing right or what I'm doing wrong. And that's why I always appreciated the coaches who would spend hours after the game just going to the cage. And in those days, you had the cages underneath the stadium. You didn't worry about the ground crew getting in your way, because you just go in the cage underneath and you could hit for hours if you wanted to. You could hit until your hands would bleed. And we would do it because we had hardworking coaches too. You've been there. You had hardworking coaches.
Yeah, and I can attest to that. And Pete Rose I grew up with, and the things he used to do. You know, having that special childhood that I had and tagging along with Dad to the ballpark and hanging out with all you guys. Everybody always used to ask me as a kid, "Who's your favorite player?" I never had a favorite player, because I thought, well, maybe today Manny Trio's my favorite because I'm painting his glove with him. Or tomorrow Bull's my favorite. Or maybe I'm pissed at Bull. Maybe Pete, I'm sleeping at Pete's house tonight and he's my favorite player. I never had a favorite. But I, to this day, and this isn't tooting your horn, people ask me, because I was a hard-nosed player and I busted my ass and I played the game the way I thought it was supposed to be played. But when anyone asked me, I said, if you want to just look at how the game is supposed to be played on the field, just watch Pete. Because it was like, you're the one guy I remember that if you had four hits, it wasn't good enough to go 4 for 5. I better get that fifth hit. If I'm not get that fifth hit, I'm pissed. Yeah. Whereas most players, man, they're 3 for 3. Whatever happens today, I had a great day.
A great
great day. You always wanted more. You always wanted more. I remember that uniquely about you.
Yeah. Well, I was watching the Reds the other night on TV, and India got a 4-hit night. And they come up his fifth time up, and the announcer said, "Well, India got 4 hits tonight, the third time he's did that in his career." I hesitate for a moment. I says, "Damn, I got 4 hits 73 times."
you want and three? Ain't enough. Give me 4.
I got 5 hits. I got 5 hits 10 times, and I got 3 hits over 1,050 times. You know, you can't be satisfied in baseball. You know, if you're 3 for 3, you want that fourth. If you're 4 for 4, you want that fifth. You know, and I had a lot of offers too. I mean, I made almost 10,000 outs, Brett. I made 9,800 outs. That's a lot of freaking outs, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
No wonder I'm not in the Hall of Fame. I made all them damn outs.
Yeah, you suck.
But you were right. I batted almost 16,000 times. If you get an official at bats, which is 14,053, I believe, and I hit 1,500 walks, right. I got hit 120 times. So you're knocking on the door for 16,000 at bats. I'll tell you something, I got a record and never be duplicated. I heard more national anthems than anybody else.
That's right, especially when you got to go to Montreal. You got two every night.
Two every day, and one of them I couldn't speak, I couldn't speak French.
That is awesome.
I even played in Montreal, Brett, and you know this as well as anybody else. I had three Hall of Famers on that team. Raines, Dawson, and Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and I had a couple, three Hall of Famers in Philadelphia, and I had the Hall of Famers in Cincinnati. You know, Frank Robinson was one of the top four players in the history of baseball. That's the guy that got me through my first couple years, just hanging around with Frank and going out with eating with him on the road and talking baseball, him and Veda Penson. I mean, when you got guys like that, who play the game the way they're supposed to be. That's all I used to tell people, Brett. I played the game the way you're supposed to play the game. I don't want any pats on the backs because I hustled or did this or did that or dove for a ball here or did this or did that. I played the way every kid should play the game every day. And I tell that to my son. He played the same way. I got a grandson, 9 years old, Brett. He's the best player in the league. You ought to see this little kid hit. He is unbelievable. He plays every day. And I got another grandson who's playing in junior college outside of Jacksonville. That's where my son Pete is right now, down there watching him play.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he's going to be a first rounder sometime. But neither one of them are going to beat my record. And if they did, I'd have them assassinated the day before they were approaching it. That's one thing I can live with. Is I'm the hit king. Don't take that away from me.
You're the hit king. And it's funny, too, because Petey will call me and I'll be like, hey, Petey, you get the freaking hit king on the podcast. Hit king hadn't called you back. I said, no, I had mom pounding him at the Phillies reunion. I said, I haven't got a hold of him. He goes, I'll talk to the kid. It's crazy the way Petey and me and him will talk about you, you know, his dad, you, me.
Well, he's the hit prince. He's the hit prince.
You know who named him the hit prince? Me. I said, if that, because Petey came up, he got called up in Cincinnati when I was in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And Petey, for those of you listening out there, Petey Jr., he is a piece of work. I mean, he could be a stand-up comedian. But he came to Cincy. And he kept saying, yeah, Booney. And he's telling Pete Sr. stories. He's like, yeah, but Pete did it. He's telling stories, and he tells them in a funny way. And he goes, and he's referring to you as a part of the story as the hit king. So after this elaborate story he told, he kept saying, the hit king says to me, I said, if he's the hit king, you're the damn hit prince. He goes, I love it. Ever since then, everybody called him the hit prince.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I don't think he got a fair shake with the what the heck was that manager's name?
Jack McKeon.
Yeah, he started Pete when he came up one day, and that's the last time he got to start a game.
I remember.
And so that was a tough deal for him. But he can tell his kids, which he does, that he made the big leagues. He wore a big league uniform, and it's worth working for. You know it's worth working for. We've been there, did that, and hopefully we can – help someone that's listening to us today work a little harder and maybe make the big league someday. There's no life like the big leagues, Brett. I think you'll agree with that. You know, I don't care if it's football, basketball, hockey, or baseball. If you make the big leagues, you've accomplished something.
Without a doubt.
No question about it.
We got to live a pretty darn special life.
Yeah, yeah.
If we were playing today,
hey, I'd be making $20-25 million a year.
You got at least.
I mean,
at least.
I remember for the 79 season, Brett, I signed a 5-year contract with the Phillies for $810,000 a year. 79 for the 79 season made me the highest paid player in sports.
Yep.
$810,000 because at that time, there was a basketball player from North Carolina State named David Thompson. He was making $800,000. And I told the Reds I wanted to be the highest paid player in sports, and they gave me $810,000. the guy was not a mathematician, because you could have given me 801 and I'd have been the highest paid player. But
you'd have been happy. He didn't even need to give you 801, 899,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to talk.
Go ahead.
No, finish.
That was the day, that was my day in the sun. I mean, because, you know, that was big money in those days. Hey, when I made the big leagues, Brett, 1963, and won Rookie of the Year, my salary was $7,000 a year, because the couple years before that in minor leagues, I'm making $500 a month, and you're only working 5 months. Figure that out. That's $2,500 a year. Mm-hmm. Plus, don't forget the meal money. We got the meal money. We survived on the meal money.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I had so much fun in the minor leagues playing for Macon. We won the championship. Okay. Tampa, when I played for Johnny Vandermeer and the Tampa Tarpons, we won the championship. And by the time I got to Cincinnati, I only spent 2 years and 2 months in the minors. I expected to win the championship. You know, that's just was the thing that was in my mind, that you got to win. And when you're hanging around Helms and Queen and Shamsky and Bristol and those guys in the minors, hey, winning become part of your everyday routine. I mean, I don't know if it's like that today, but it should be. You know, I teach my grandsons the difference in winning and losing. Whenever I talk to them, which is I go to all the practices and I go to their games, I think I make them nervous when I go to the games. I tell them, just bust your ass and play hard and win. Bust your ass and play hard and win. That's all I want you to do. Because the name's going to follow you. And if you're not busting your chops, they're not going to call you. They're going to call you Pete something, not Pete Rose.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. All right, current story. And this cracked me up. And I think about this. I said, that's so Pete right there. That's exactly. You said this when the Ohtani thing broke. You said, "Shit, I wish I had an interpreter." did you think we'd be at a point? And yeah, this is kind of, you know, obvious for me to say. Do you think we'd have a point where gambling in baseball is the way it is now, with all you've been through? I mean, every time I look at a TV.
They got the odds.
Watch a game. It's everywhere. It's you can bet in the stadium.
Yeah, they got a window at the ballpark of Cincinnati. But I was wrong when I made the mistakes of doing what I did. But they're not going to do anything to Ohtani. He's the poster child for baseball. And if you screw with Ohtani, you don't want to lose those $130 million Japanese fans that Ohtani has. You know, following baseball because of Ohtani. I mean, Ohtani's a real good. I never met Shohei. Have you met him?
I haven't met him.
I guess he's a nice guy. He seems like to be a nice guy. And he can hit and he can pitch. It's a shame he can't pitch anymore because he has such good stuff. But hey, I don't know what the guy did. I don't know if he did this or did that. I know one thing, most Asians like to gamble. If you go to the casinos, you go to the baccarat table, it's all Asians because they love to gamble. Now, I don't know if Ohtani loves to gamble or not. I guess his agent, his interpreter, liked to gamble. I mean, hey, Brett, wouldn't you like to be in a situation, you might be, I don't know, where your buddy that you hung around with in school, in college, is now your interpreter, and he can go into your checking account and take out $4.7 million and not tell you about it. Wouldn't that be nice to have a checking account like that?
Pete, I've thought about this, okay? And believe me, I'm an Ohtani fan. I think what he's done for the game is huge. I think he can rake, and I think he's got great stuff on the mound. He's missing this year with Tommy John. He'll be back next year as a pitcher. So I'm a big Ohtani fan. So you ever know this? When you're a fan of something, you go through it and you rationalize it in your brain and you want it to come out that no, nothing bad happened here. Right. Yeah. Well, I've gone over it time and time again. And I think the point you just made, it just doesn't add up. There is no way on earth that kind of money goes missing from your account via the interpreter. Okay. I deal with my bank lady. Her name is Bridget. Okay. If I had $100,000 wire going out. First of all, wire, there's a lot, it's an intricate thing. You just don't send hundreds of thousands of dollars with the click of a mouse. You've got to do some internal stuff. So I'd get a phone call from Bridget and she'd say, Brett, not to get into your business, but I saw that there was $100,000. I just want to make sure it's all on the up and up. We're all good. Yeah, Bridget, it's fine. It's for an investment, whatever. Okay. That's how it would go down. But the fact that they're saying he never had a clue. But Pete, what bookie do you know on the earth that would give you a $16 million leash and say, oh, yeah, you got a credit line for that? I know you're the interpreter. It doesn't add up to me. It doesn't
add up. And this is before he's making the $700 million.
Yeah.
This year,
well, he's making $100 million. Right. He's making probably 60, 70, 80 off the field, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is his first year of his big contract.
Right, right.
I mean, as far as the money is concerned, I know he signed 5 years of $2 million a year, and the rest is deferred.
Right.
I mean, this guy, you're right about that. I mean, a bookmaker's not going to take that kind of money unless he knows it's in the bank.
No, that would be like my son, Jake. And him going to a bookie and me telling the guy, listen, he can make bets if he wants. Well, yeah. Brett, Jake's making bets for $1 million. Is that okay? Wait a minute. What's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to just extend that to him. I don't know. It's not for me to decide. Let the people that investigate. But for me, just from the player's stand, and I'm not saying anything about baseball, nothing like that. But for me to say that that kind of money went missing and it was this scheme that an interpreter did, it's really tough for my brain to say, oh, yeah, I believe you. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they prosecute this interpreter. And if they do, he's going to sing like a canary. He's going to sing like a canary. So I don't think baseball and the Ohtani situation is really over with yet. What they got to do if they want to do is bring John Dowd out of the limelight. Let him get on the case. That's the guy that got on my case. I mean, this guy used to take care of the mafia types, so he knows what he's doing. But baseball, they don't want to investigate Ohtani because he's their poster child, and he's a great player. And I hope he's clean because it would be bad for the state of baseball if he ended up being one of those guys that broke the rules like I did. Hey, I've been suspended 30 years, man. 30 years. I could have killed her and I'd have been out by now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. No, don't.
You can kill a wife today and you won't get 30 years. Think about that. I got suspended in 1989. Where are we at? 2024.
How has that affected you? Other than the obvious, you're not in Cooperstown with being the all-time hit leader. Other than the obvious, how has that affected you? And through the years, how have you handled that?
The only thing it's done to me, Brett, is it's kept me out of the game that I love. Sure, I still do appearances. I still do great at card shows. Because in the eyes of a lot of people, I'm the victim, especially the way baseball is handling gambling today. Every time I turn on a TV, it's about gambling. It's about gambling. Update the game on the fifth. You want to bet it after the fifth? Here, take this. This is the odds. This is the odds. This is the odds. I mean, ESPN, they're on top of the odds today. And they let the public know it. And, you know, I can see the temptation for players based on how easy it is. You can go to the ballpark now, go up to a window at the ballpark and bet on the game.
Yeah.
No bookmakers are involved.
It's all legal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all legal. Which I don't know if it's good or bad for the game. I can't figure it out.
You think Cooperstown's going to happen one day eventually?
Yeah, but I'll be dead.
Yeah.
They'll wait till I die and then they'll change of heart and put me on the list and I'll go from there. But that, you know, I can't blame them, Brett, because I'm the one who screwed up. I'm not going to sit here on your show and blame baseball because I'm suspended. I think the suspension is too long, if you want to know the truth. You know, I paid my time. I put the time in. But I still go around this country. I'm the hit king, as you know.
And I do know that.
I do talk positive about the game. There's some great, great young players in the game of baseball. And I'd rather concentrate on those guys as opposed to the guys that beat their wives, the guys that get drunk every night, the guys that do this or do the bad things. There's too many good guys playing the game of baseball, and there's too many good players for me to badmouth the game of baseball. I kind of feel sorry for the commissioner because he's got a tough job. All these commissioners of these sports got a tough job. You know, they thought they were by the steroid situation and stuff like that. Now the gambling thing has taken over. But they let it take over. They let it take over. And it's just the way it is. But baseball's been very, very good to me. And baseball is interesting to watch today. I think there's too many bad teams, Brett. I was noticing the other day there's like 8 or 9 teams that are way under 500. That's not good for the game. One division has every team but one under 500. How can that be good for the game? I mean, how would you like to be on the White Sox or some of those teams to start that they have? You know, all of a sudden you're 5-21. How do you get out of that hole? What do you tell your fans? Keep coming to the game. We're going to turn it around. Well, right. You got to win 15 in a row to get to 500. That's rough.
Who's in your entire life, in your lifetime, from the time you started playing? I'm gonna sweep it from anyone you've ever played with, against, or watched. Who's your Mount Rushmore of the greatest baseball players you've ever seen or played with or played against? It could be current, or it could be your time, or before you.
I believe, and I got to meet his daughter in Cooperstown. I believe the greatest player in the history of baseball is George Herman Babe Ruth. If Babe was playing today, he'd hit 75 home runs. Because when he played, they were throwing rocks. The ball was not used like it is today. Plus, he could pitch. Plus, he loved kids. He was good for public relations. Now, one of the best players I ever played against was a guy named Stan the Man Musial from St. Louis. He was a great player, too. And, of course, you know, I'm like everybody else. I played against Mays. I played against Aaron. I played against Clemente. You know, I played against all the Hall of Famers, the Willie McCoveys and people like that. But who are you going to pick, Mays, Aaron, or Clemente is the greatest player ever? I don't know. That's why I just like to talk in the 20s and talk about Babe Ruth. And I remember I met his daughter up in Cooperstown several years ago. She was 88 years old. Claire Ruth Stevens was her name. She walked 3 blocks down the street to say hi to me and tell me that her dad would appreciate it the way I played the game. And I'm going to tell you right now, Brett, I've been in front of federal judges before. That's the most nervous I ever been talking to Babe Ruth's daughter. It was that's scary.
That's pretty cool, though. It's pretty cool.
I mean, she was just a normal person. I'm saying to myself, I'm talking to Babe Ruth's daughter? Wow. That was a big day for me.
It's awesome. I got a Babe Ruth ball, but I've never met his daughter.
Wow. Well, she's gone now, but she was up in Cooperstown going into the Hall of Fame. And she was 88 or 87 years old, and she purposely walked 3 blocks down the street where I was signing and came in the store, and everybody was nervous. I wasn't the only one nervous. I mean, we're watching Babe Ruth's daughter walk in this place.
He's the guy. But I think that's a testament to how you played the game. The fact that she made the trek down there had to make you kind of feel, wow, I affected her that much where, you know, in your eyes, the daughter of the greatest player ever had to come down and tell me this. That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, I'll never forget that. That was dead on, man. That was goosebumpy cool right there. Goosebumpy.
Who's the way they're hitting now? it's completely different. I don't like the angles, the launch angle, the this, the that. Yeah, there's a lot of talented guys out there.
Yeah.
In my day, it was three things. For me, when I was playing, it was how I got paid. It was average, home runs, RBIs. RBIs being the most important for my type of player. Now it's gone to OPS, average they don't care about. For Pete Rose, what is the best? How do you judge what a great hitter is?
Well, you got to hit 300 to be a great hitter.
I agree.
I mean, if you don't hit 300, I mean.
We're in the minority in the current game, though, saying that. I agree with you. Tell me, I want a guy up in a big situation.
Well, most of them can't hit 300, Brett. They don't want to hit 300 because they can't. That's why they don't want to hit 300. You know, you bet you got to hit 300 and you have 600 at bats. You need a lot of hits. And they'd rather, because baseball is partly the reason for that, Brett, because baseball are paying the players to hit home runs. Okay? But you're not paying players hitting first and second in the lineup to hit home runs. You're paying players hitting third, fourth, and fifth in the lineup to hit home runs. But you said the most important thing, runs batted in. Because if you don't knock in a run, you can't win the game. You can't win the game 0-0.
Right.
How many runs can you score? You got to score one more than the opposition every night. And that's sometimes that's very difficult to do. Because as you know, you've been through it, good pitching will stop good hitting.
Every time.
Every time. Why? Because we're the only sport that's played today that you fail and go to the Hall of Fame 7 out of 10 times. If Tom Brady completed 3 out of 10, if Michael Jordan shot 3 out of 10, would they be in the Hall of Fame? Absolutely not. But if you're a baseball player, you can make 7 outs out of every 10 at bats and go to the Hall of Fame. Well, most guys.
That is fun. That's still Pete. When you come to the Phillies, your big red machine, you win 2 World Series, you come to the Phillies, that's when I got to meet you. You come over with that group of guys.
Yeah.
Those teams were good too when they were playing the big red machine in 76, 77, 78, 79. Phillies were good.
Yeah.
You got there in 80. And you finally get to the World Series and you end up winning that World Series. People don't talk about this enough, but that series you went through with the Astros was one of the greatest series of all time.
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear about coming to Philly after being a Red your entire life. That's all you ever knew.
Well, what it was like coming to Philly. First year in Philly in 79, I did well. I think I hit 330 or something, but we didn't win.
Right.
And then it took the Philly players – I think a whole season to watch me play every day to really understand how I approached the game and how I played the game. Because like you mentioned, the problem with the Phillies when I was with the Reds was the Reds. The Phillies couldn't beat the Reds. Now, all of a sudden, if I leave the Reds and go to the Phillies, they don't have that problem no more. I chose the team I wanted to go to, and it was Philadelphia. Because whenever Philly came into town, I would go out to eat with Glazinski, Boa, and Schmidt. I would just – and all they would do was talk about baseball. They were young players. They were young players. But they didn't – see, Boone wasn't going to look up to Glazinski. Glazinski wasn't going to look up to Boa. Boa wasn't going to look up to Schmidt. They were all about the same age and they come up the same time. So what I'm saying, they didn't have a team leader. Now, all of a sudden, I come over there with over 3,000 hits and World Series under my belts. I instantly become the team leader. It's not something I tried to do. It's just something that happened. I become the team leader just by being who I was. And the way I played was contagious. And it just caught on. And we won in 1980, the first time in 86 years the Phillies won the World Series. 86 years. That's a long time. That's a long time.
it was awesome. And I don't know if you remember this, but the night before the parade, I'm with Petey. After you guys clinch, you win the World Series. Tug strikes out Willie Wilson. I stayed at your house.
Time.
Yeah. For the 13th. I stayed at your house that night.
Yeah.
And you put us, I forget, you were staying downtown in Philly at some place, and me and Petey were out on the pullout couch.
Yeah.
And all I remember is this, and I won't be too graphic on it, but I remember waking up with one Pete Rose hovering above me saying, something happened, and you looked at me and you said, wake up, Mullion, we got to go to the parade. And I do remember that. And I don't know if you remember that, but I still got that in my 10-year-old brain.
That was a sight, wasn't it, to see those million people in the streets?
It was unbelievable.
Then you go out to JFK and there's, what, 75,000 waiting for us out there?
Yeah. It was awesome. And that's a part of my childhood that I took for granted. Like, I'm sitting there by the end of the float. I still have pictures. Mom, Sue Boone's got pictures of me on the float at 10, and I look like, hey, can we get this over with? I got to go home and take a nap. But how cool that was to be able to be a part of that. It was pretty awesome.
Philly fans are great. I mean, I always looked at it like this, Brett, and I think I'm right when I say this. Philly fans want two things. They want you to win, and they want you to bust your ass. And if you don't want to bust your ass, don't go to Philadelphia, because they're not going to like it. And they know when you're busting your butt or not. And that's the mentality that I had. Play hard and win. Play hard and win. That's why I got more wins than anybody in the history of sports. Hey, listen to this. I played, not World Series playoffs, things like that, All-Star games. I played in 1,972 winning games. The guy second on that list.
Uh-oh.
So that's pretty good company to be in. So, you know, hey, when you try to become, you try to hit, you try to win, and you try to do things, and all of a sudden you got more hits than anybody else, more wins than anybody else, two out of three isn't really bad.
It's not. Charlie Hustler, the hit king.
Huh?
Charlie Hustle or the Hit King? What do you like better?
Well, I think Charlie Hustle really emphasizes how I played. And when you get a nickname that's given to you by a guy named Mickey Mantle, it's pretty special. I'm the Hit King just because of the process of elimination. But Charlie Hustle is easy to remember because I played like Charlie Hustle. I never stopped doing anything except playing hard, trying to win, breaking up double plays, diving for balls in the outfield. You know something I thought I never got credit for, Brett? I don't think I ever got credit for it, as good as first baseman as I was when I played first base. And I went to first base when I went to Philadelphia. But I had Schmidt and Boa and Trio throwing the ball to me. Makes it pretty easy when you got those guys throwing to you. And I always took pride in it. You know, I won a couple straight gold.
Shit.
And the year after I won the two gold gloves, the next year, I led the league in assists in the outfield and did not make an error and didn't win the golden glove. It was a popularity contest. Led the league in assists and did not make an error in the outfield and did not win the golden glove after winning two straight. Figure that one out.
It's amazing how many positions you played, too. You were an outfielder. You told me you came up as a second baseman. I know you played third on the Big Red Machine. You played left, right. You end up playing first later in your career. You were great first. I got to ask you about it. Or you can touch on the spiking of the ball, one of my favorites all time. That's still, I mean, that was before the kids today. We got bat flips and we got this and we got that. I said, Pete started it all with the bouncing on the artificial turf. That was my favorite. What position did you enjoy the most?
I hated the opposition, Brett. And if a guy makes a great play and throws a guy out, I like to spike it right in front of him, piss him off.
Oh, it was
because
the best.
if you're playing against guys that are pissed off, they're not going to do as well. And I used to hit the turf with the ball, and it would end up right on the mound. I had a way of doing that.
Well, you'd bounce it like a basketball player, and then give the outs, and then throw it back to the pitcher on a put out.
Yeah.
So what position out of all of them, or did you have a favorite that you enjoyed the most?
First, because it's most involved. I made the All-Star team in five positions, but first base was my favorite position. And I really can't tell you my favorite position because we'll get cut off the air if I do.
I love it. Couple more. What's bigger for you? Breaking the all-time hit record, winning a World Series.
Oh, well, you're talking team or individually.
Right.
I mean, you know, individually, to get the hit record is the all-time. But winning a World Series, you have a chance of doing that every year. I played one-fourth of my career, I was in the World Series. I played 24 years, and I was in the World Series six times. So that's every 4 years I played in the World Series. I remember, who was that player? Joe DiMaggio played 12 or 13 years, was in 11 World Series. Wow. Think how much fun his career was.
Just getting ready for the postseason every year.
Every year. I mean, when you got Mantle and Barra, guys like that, his teammates, that's like me saying, you know, Schmidt and Bench. The greatest of all times. Morgan, he was the most intelligent player I ever played with. And probably the ugliest. No, he wasn't.
How about the commercial, the Aqua Velva commercial with you and Morgan? That's one of my favorite all time. It couldn't be better. It couldn't be more scripted for Joe.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hello, Pete. Oh, it's Pete Rose. Hey, it's the greatest. It's the best. I can trade those. Me and Petey trade those old commercials back and forth on a text. I can't get enough of them.
We had fun, Brad. We had so much fun playing a game of baseball. I just wonder all the money they're making today. Are they having as much fun as we did? I would doubt it. They're having fun when they go to the banks on the 1st and the 15th, but are they having fun at the ballpark with their teammates? You know, are they allowed to today with the press and stuff like that? Everybody looking for controversies. You know, I mean, it's almost like you're scared to talk to some guys today that are friends of yours, but they'll get on a show. And the only thing you asked me that I haven't really talked much about is the interpreter. Yeah, I just was kidding when I said that, but it became a big deal. And I guess it might have worked if I had an interpreter, but we'll never know, will we?
No. Being a player manager, I think you were the last guy to do it.
I'll be the last guy to do it too, Brett.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You think it'll ever happen again? And what were the challenges?
I'll tell you why.
What were the challenges?
Well, here's the challenges. Okay. You have to put the players first. Okay, you have to put the team first, the players first. And because you have to do that, you have to spend time with the players. And if you spend time with the players, in my case, I just ran out of time to keep my skills honed. You know, I had to take care of the press. You got to take care of the press if you're a manager today. So when everyone else is, that's why I always took my batting practice for the game and after the game. Because during batting practice is when you're sitting on the bench talking to all the members of the press. And I couldn't neglect the press or they'd run you out of town. So taking care of the press and taking care of your players, which is most importantly, understanding your players, understanding they all have concerns. They all have different things that they would need. And you have to supply all those things. As far as managing the game, that was easy. Tommy Helms was my bench coach, and he was like a manager in disguise. I mean, he kept me abreast of everything that was going on. And it's the seventh inning. Got to get this guy up. Got this guy for the eighth in case we need to bring a right-hander in. You know, I was never late in bringing someone in that I thought I'd need. And that's the secret to being a manager. Always having your best against their best because you got a chance of being successful. It's not as difficult as it seems if you're in the game. You know, if you're in the game, you got to watch the game. You have to every play, you give a take sign, you give a steal sign, you give a hit and run sign. You know, you have to have your players ready. I didn't tell a player, okay, you're pinch hitting. I let him know the inning before.
Right,
so-and-so comes up. Because if you do it that way, Brett, as you know, a player has an excuse if you don't give him time to warm up. You just can't say, oh, I need a pinch runner. Brett, get a bat. You're hitting. Because you're not ready to hit. You got to put your game face on. You know, if you want to go down in the tunnel and take a couple swings or go up to the clubhouse and the net and take a couple swings, now you're ready to pinch hit. You can't surprise a guy into action because he's not going to do well. Even though he has the ability to do well, he probably won't do well. And I was never a pinch hitter. I don't know how many times I pinched it in my life. Not very many. Not very many. Hey, I had a guy pinch hit for me one night, Frank Robinson. That's okay. He's one of the top four or five hitters players in the history of baseball. It wasn't a bad thing to have Frank Robinson pinch hit for you. That's like having Babe Ruth pinch hit for you. You gonna get mad at that?
Yeah. I think you make.
You ever had anybody pinch hit for you?
One time.
Okay. One time.
Hal Morris.
Pretty good hitter.
And at the time, he was hitting 330. It was a tough righty. I was struggling. I think it was 1997. And believe me, my ego took a hit. Yeah. I had never been pinch hit before, but at the end of the day, I had to look in the mirror and go, man, I'm struggling right now. Hal's hitting 330. He had a day off. If I was the manager, I'd have done the same shit. Sometimes you got to own it, you know? We all have egos.
You probably tried to kick your manager's ass in the back.
Oh, yeah. How dare you pinch hit for me? And then I'm looking at the numbers, Pete, and I'm going, shit, I'm hitting 227 right now. I'd have pinch hit for me, too.
Yeah, but if you did four straight at-bats without an out and you're hitting 227, you're due for a hit. One for five, 200.
That's right. The players, what would you have done with the technology we got today? First of all, I want to hear your take on the box that's on all the Fox telecasts, the umpires.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. I think it's not correct. What would Pete Rose have done with all the data and all the information that the players have at their fingertips?
Well, it wouldn't have changed my mind, Brett, because let me tell you something. You probably were the same. When you're in the dugout and you're on the road and you're first up in the first inning, and all of a sudden four guys walk out from behind home plate and one of them's got a chest protector on. Now, you know those guys, and you know the guy with the chest protector on. Is he a good umpire, a bad umpire? A pitcher's umpire, a hitter's umpire, a low ball umpire, a high ball umpire. Now, I changed my game based on who's behind the plate umpire. Like if Lee Wire is umpiring, you know Lee, the big guy.
Yeah.
He called everything a strike. Okay? Dutch Rennert, his strike zone was about this big. So you can be more patient as a hitter. And that's all part of having knowledge about your opposition. That's why young players don't do as well because they haven't been there long enough to figure things out. There's some umpires I trust my life with them. There's other umpires I don't want nothing to do with them, but they're nice guys. They just don't have ability. One I can think of, nice guy, Dick Stello. Remember him? I don't think he ever knew the strike zone. He guessed. Yep. But I knew he was guessing, so I'm swinging my ass off. I'm not taking any pitches with Dick Stello back there. Lee Wire, don't take any pitches with Lee back there. He was a pitcher's umpire.
Right.
Now, you could bounce it up there, and he'd call a strike. I mean, that's just all part of knowing the game of baseball. You know, putting your homework on before the game starts. It's not rocket science. Too many guys make hitting difficult. Maybe it's because it's 3 out of 10, you go to the Hall of Fame. What other sport can you fail 7 out of 10 times? I talked about this about 30 minutes ago. I don't know any sports. Do you?
Nothing. No?
No. No.
And that's the way the umpiring used to be. Like you said, I mean, we can't control who's behind the plate every night. But I know if a certain guy's back there, okay, and he's going to establish his zone early in the game, and I'm going to say, okay, if that pitch low and away is a strike, you got to give me the high ball. And as long as you the great ones would establish their zone, now we know what a strike, what a ball is. It's on us. And the great ones are consistently in that zone. The bad ones are the ones that call that low and away and up and in. And hey, wait a minute, I can't cover everything. Well, maybe you're just not, you don't have enough ability to stick in your zone.
Right. I think, Brett, you'll agree that in baseball today, most of the umpires are real good.
They are really good. Yeah. And I think they got a no-win situation with now everybody sitting on their couches an expert because they got that stupid square, which they really I just had Teddy Barrett on the show the other day, and he told me, he said, Booney, we don't even train with that box. That box is not accurate. That should be for entertainment purposes only. They should put a disclaimer on the television set. He said, we're in a no-win situation. We got to call what they tell us to call, which we train on behind the scenes. The players are well aware of what that strike zone is.
Every umpire, Booney, has his own strike zone.
Yeah.
And when I was a player, I knew Lee Wire's strike zone. Augie Donatelli, I knew his strike zone. Al Barlick, I knew his strike zone. Just like you know who you can argue with and who you can't.
That's right.
I've argued with umpires for 5 minutes, but you say one curse word, they'll kick your ass out.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear it. And if an umpire makes a mistake, how's he rectify it? You can't change your decision. And all these replays they have today, but I think these replays will prove that umpires are pretty damn good at what they do. I give them a lot of credit.
I do too. In a time where they're so heavily dissected and critical. Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, they got every angle, and you know, you gotta realize at some point that there's a human element to this, and it's tough out there. So I think that's fair. I think that the umpires are as good as they've ever been. It's just they're in a no-win situation with the technology we have to critique them on a daily basis.
Right.
I agree with that. Game better today? Better or worse? We're all going to have our eras where we love the most.
I have a feeling how you're going to comment on this. To be honest with you, Booney, I think there's too many home runs. I think there's too many home runs in the game. And I don't know if it's because of the ball's juiced. Most of these ballparks, the athletes are bigger, stronger. Most of these ballparks, a lot of them are band boxes. You know, the ball travels in Cincinnati, travels in Philadelphia. Wrigley Field, if the wind's blowing out, it's a joke. You know the ballparks that were jokes. Mm-hmm. And it's easier for players to hit home runs today than it was when I played. That's why Hank Aaron's only got 755 home runs. How many did Barry Bonds hit? 760 something? And he was a tremendous hitter. Barry Bonds was a tremendous hitter. Yeah. And he didn't play in a home run hitter's ballpark.
He played in a huge yard in San Francisco.
Yes, especially the straightaway center.
Yeah, right center.
I mean, but you think it wasn't easier to hit home runs in the Polo Grounds or Ebbets Field or Crosley Field or Wrigley Field or old St. Louis that had the thing in right field? I mean, but baseball made a determination. They won home runs hit several years ago, and they got what they wanted. And the other thing they got with the home runs is high salaries. High salaries. Yeah. Hey. I never begrudge a player because he makes a lot of money, because he negotiated a contract. No one held a gun up to his head and said, you got to pay me $700 million. They think they got a bargain. That's why they gave him $700 million. We'll see.
Shows you how much the owners are making.
TV contracts, buddy. You know that as well as I.
Yeah.
You and I guess. Yeah, you and I both got faces for TV.
I guess, to come on what you said about the homer, I guess the thing that I look at is, okay, when I played, I would strike out 100 times a year, Pete. And yeah. I felt like I went back to the dugout a lot at 100. There's guys striking out 200 times. I don't know if I could. I don't know. I think I'd start developing a twitch. I mean, striking out 100 times, I felt like I struck out a lot. And that was kind of normal for guys that drove in runs in my generation, 100 punch-outs.
Free swingers, yeah.
But nowadays, I mean, 200? I don't know if I could live with myself. That's the problem. The players are different. Yeah, like you said, they are talented. And the great players are great. They really are. They're phenomenal. But I just think there's a different mentality. Like you said, it. And I'm not saying it doesn't affect people when they strike out. Of course, we're all affected. But I'd have a tough time holding it in. Like, you would know by the look on my face when I struck out, especially runner on third, less than two outs. Right. That was like stuff we'd lose sleep at over when I played. And I watched the game today, and I don't see that.
How about this? We're playing a game in Cincinnati on Sunday. Game's over. We get on a plane. We go to L.A. Next 3 days, we get Koufax, Drysdale, and Sutton. Then we go to San Francisco and get Marichal and Perry and someone else. Then we stop in St. Louis on the way home, and we get Carlton, Gibson, and someone else. So there's a 9-game road trip, 7 Hall of Famers on that road trip. Now, I don't know if they have pitching staffs like that today in the game of baseball. And they still get all these strikeouts. Sure, players throw harder. You know as well as I. When you were a player, it didn't matter how hard the guy threw. It's how much the ball moved.
Right.
There's not seen a fastball that you couldn't hit. You never saw a fastball that you couldn't hit. And it's the same today. Sure, they throw 98, 99, 100. Just, you know, Edmund Doubleday, he created a great sport. No one will ever throw so hard you can't hit it. That's the way it is today. That's the way it was in 63 when I was a rookie. It's never going to change. It's never going to change. It's who's got the good breaking stuff. Who's got the best, you know, the best pitch in baseball? I know you know.
Good located heater.
Strike one.
Yeah.
That's the best pitch in baseball. Strike one. Not ball one.
Strike
one. Because ball one, you change your whole scheme of how you're going to pitch. Strike one, you got half the guy in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Pitchers
he's on
just
the,
don't
you,
understand.
You
got
to put him on the defensive.
Get him ahead. Get ahead in the count. Good pitchers are strike one. Bad pitchers are ball one, ball two. You're not going to win in the big leagues pitching behind in the count. You're not going to win. They're too good. They're going to hit the ball too hard, too far. Damn, I feel like I should go out and take some batting practice and play tonight.
I got you pumped up. We're ready to go. All said and done, Pete, what do you want to be remembered for?
Hits. That's what I concentrated on from day one. And winning. They're about tie. They're tie. Getting hits and winning. And I played on the right teams to do that, both of those. And I played with the right players that do both of those. Winning is what it's all about.
It's awesome.
You know,
it really is.
Anytime really I was is. In a World Series, or hey, I played in 17 All Star games and we won 16. The only one we didn't win was 1971, when Doc Ellis threw that changeup to Reggie Jackson and he hit it on the roof at Tiger Stadium.
Yeah,
that's the only game we lost. And I felt that the National League was always better than the American League, and I'll tell you one reason. One reason was the National League had all the black players. American League didn't have any. What did black players create? Speed. We had all the speed in the National League. We had the Mazes and the Aarons and the Clementes and people like that. They had good players, K-Lines, Yastrzemskis and people like that. But yet the American League couldn't do the things that the National League did. And we beat them every year. Well, we made our substitutes during the All-Star game. You take Mays out, you put Aaron in. You take Aaron out, you put Clemente in. You know, you get two or three guys out, I get to go in. So, you know, I'm the hitting champion, and I get, and it was hard for me to make the first team because of the guys I'm battling with. And it was always justified. It's not bad to be compared or sit behind Mays, Aaron, and Clemente, or Mays, Aaron, and Musial. I mean, those are three of the top players in the history of baseball. They just happened to be the position I was in.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, and you got to go to 17 of those games. 17-time All-Star, 4,256 hits, 303 career. And I know that's important to you. It's tough. It's tough hitting 300 for a year, let alone for a career, and let alone for as many times as you went to the plate. And this is the big thing, Pete. I got 200 hits one time. I got 206 hits in 2001. You got 200 hits 10 times.
I got 198 twice.
It's a ridiculous. People don't understand to get 200 hits.
I got 192 twice.
Yeah, you got to play every day. Every day. You can't miss it. To get 200 hits, you can hit 300, play every day, and not get 200 hits. You did it 10 times. That's the thing that I was looking at the numbers. I said, 10 times? People don't understand how hard it is to get 200 hits. You did it 10 times. Pretty awesome.
Got to swing the bat, buddy. Swing the bat. You can't hit the ball if you don't swing the bat.
You got it. Well, Pete, man, this has been awesome. I appreciate you coming on the Brett Boone podcast.
Anytime.
A lot of fun.
Anytime.
One of the great greats, and definitely the hit king, and a guy that in myself that grew up around a lot of great players and played with and against a lot of great players.
Hey, tell him, Brett, when
to
you
this
were
day,
kid, when you were a kid, did I always treat the kids good?
Always great. Always great. And always with that mentality of let's hit, and let's win. But, Pete, truly, all the people I've been around, there is that one guy that I still tell the kids. I said, if you want to know how to – not a style or everybody's got their own way of playing. I said, just the way you go about the game of baseball. Watch Pete Rose play. That's the way you play this game correctly. Win or lose, rain or shine, Pete did it the right way. And you know, I always appreciated that about you and always admired that about you. And I love the fact that you stopped by the Brett Boone podcast. Have a great time in Cincinnati. For all of you watching the Brett Boone podcast now on YouTube, thanks for tuning in. For those of you listening on the app of your choice, until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Pete.
Hey, say hello to that guy who went to Stanford.
Bob Boone, I will. He says his best, man.
All right, thank you. Man, take care of yourself.
Love you.
Thank you.